And welcome to the Atlantic Hour.
Yes, I'm Eva.
And I'm James.
And we've got a special guest on.
Hello, my name's Ash. I'm from Wales. I'm also an exchange student alongside James and Eva.
Amazing.
So yeah, I'm excited to participate today, guys. Yeah,
we've got a lot to talk about.
We do.
We've got some yapping to do.
Big debrief.
So, just to clarify, what we're going to talk about this week is the vice presidential debate in a nutshell.
Yes.
Aired on the 1st of October, this Tuesday at 9 p.m. on CBS. And we've all watched and we have a lot of hot takes.
Mm-hmm. A lot of hot takes. It was very different to the presidential debate.
It was a very civil debate.
It wasn't as a... juicy. Maybe
I mean,
it was.
They started off by going over and...
There was a bit of tension at some point.
There was.
Where they had their mics cut.
Yeah.
But it was...
There was a lot of agreement overall.
I think they were quite... I mean, I think they were like... They brought their wives on at the end. They were all, you know, having happy families. Yeah, so it was very different to the presidential debate, and we're basically going to spend this episode debriefing key topics.
Doug and Ivanka would have hugged it out after...
No.
Doug would have. We love Doug over here.
Maybe he would.
Yeah.
Well, we don't know. Well, if we ever get him on the podcast. Yeah.
Doug, if you're listening to this, big fans.
Yeah, we love you. Okay, so should we get into discussions?
Yeah. Is there any way you want to dissect the debate? Or?
I think we can talk... I think one of the key issues that came out of the debate was Vance's policies on immigration. Mm-hmm. He seemed to link everything back to Springfield, Ohio, which, you know, has been a big topic in the previous weeks. just to recap, if you aren't up to date, Trump put out some wild claims saying that they were eating dogs and cats in Springfield, Ohio. They being the Haitian immigrants who are there legally, despite claims that they're illegal immigrants. But basically, Vance was saying that Harris is facilitating illegal immigration, and that, you know, he's kind of just saying that they're there illegally. He said... thanks to Kamala Harris's open border, we've seen a massive influx in the number of illegal guns run by the Mexican drug cartel. So he seems to be linking everything back to... he seems to be basically saying that the reason for increasing violence in the States is to do with the increasing immigration. I'm not sure what anyone else has to say about that.
Well, actually, crime's fallen. The FBI released the statistic to say that crime had actually fallen, so...
I mean, I think he was fact-checked on that.
I think he was fact-checked on a lot of things.
I think they had to. I think there's, you know, kind of no other way they can skirt around this. But he basically, that was the point of, I think, the biggest point of tension in the debate. I think because the moderator was saying, was kind of talking, was like, we need to move on. And he was not willing to let it go. He was cutting in. He was saying, I just want to clarify something. I want to clarify that they're actually there illegally. And I think at the end they had to have their mics cut because they were just, Vance was talking a bit too much.
Mm. I've got the soundbite for that.
Protected status. Well, Margaret, thank you, Senator. We have so much to get to.
Margaret, I think it's important because
we're going to turn now to the economy. Thank you,
Margaret. The rules were that you guys weren't going to fact check, and since you're fact checking me, I think it's important to say what's actually going on. So there's an application called the CBP One app, where you can go on as an illegal migrant, apply for asylum or apply for parole, and be granted legal status at the wave of a Kamala Harris open border wand. That is not a person coming in, applying for a green card and waiting for 10 years.
Thank you, Senator, the facilitation
of illegal immigration, Margaret, by
Thank you, Senator, for describing the legal process. We have so much to get to, Senator.
That's a bit chaotic, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean,
you can't actually see because this is obviously an audio podcast, but the contempt in Waltz's eyes.
Yeah, he was not a happy bunny.
And yeah, again, in hindsight, CBS has fact checked that the rise in housing demand, the correlation to immigration that Vance cited isn't actually true.
Okay.
So that obviously there's some partial increase in housing in some of those areas, but it needs to be contextualized, which he didn't effectively do. And I feel like the tone of the debate more broadly is Vance trying to almost cover for Trump policies that he doesn't even have full faith in, but now he has to condone. And I feel like that came through over and over again.
Yeah, I think what we kind of concluded was that Vance had way more to lose in this debate. Mm. And I think he covered himself very well.
Yeah.
Whereas, you know, I don't think Walt's position has really changed in the public eye. Mm. I mean, he didn't have that... I mean, Harris performed very well in the presidential debate, so he didn't really have too much ground to cover. Whereas Vance did a massive job in sorting out whatever Trump did in that presidential debate. And I think he, for the most part, minus the kind of the fact-checking, I think he was pretty good. I don't know if anyone agrees, but...
I think he did a good job, you know, given the circumstances he had. Sometimes I caught myself wondering how one could actually think what he was saying.
Yeah.
But I guess he did a better job than Trump did. I agree, though, Waltz hasn't really changed in public opinion. But then again, he didn't need to. You were right.
Yeah.
I mean, we were talking last week a few things. One, Vance was always going to be good at debating because his background and his almost political career has facilitated that aspect of his personality, where he's being trained to debate at a high level. So that was always going to come to the fore. From what I've listened to, I think what the Walls campaign wasn't expecting was the almost level of heat that Vance took out of the debate.
Yes.
So the fact that he came across more approachable and tried to sympathise with some of Walls' points to make himself look better, again, didn't play into the Walls campaign, which may have thought that Vance would go on the attack, in which case Waltz would be set up to go on the defence. That wasn't the case.
Yeah. Well, leading on to that kind of that point, we can talk about abortion, because compared to Vance and Trump, well, comparing the two, there was a massive difference in how they handled that topic. So if we remember correctly, Trump accused some people of infanticide, saying that saying that some people were like people were killing children after they're born, etc., etc. Vance kind of played devil's advocate in that. He was saying, you know, like, I agree that people don't have our trust, especially young mothers and women don't have our trust. He didn't say he didn't actually necessarily talk about what he was going to do about abortion, whether he was going to have like a nationwide ban, but he did say that they were trying to be more pro-family and make it easier for younger mothers, which is vastly different from what Trump said. So I think when you have issues like that, which are handled quite well, I think the Walz Harris campaign doesn't have too much to kind of talk, like, kind of like rally against.
Yeah, I agree.
I'd agree. I think it was easier for Vice President Harris in the presidential debate because, as you were saying, Walz was expecting to be set up to be put on the defensive. Vice President Harris was. I mean, it was quite easy. I mean, to sort of, you know, I don't even know how to explain it because the presidential debate was crazy.
Insane.
The things that were being said, like, my jaw was on the floor for most of that debate. I mean, we watched it together. It was absolutely crazy, whereas this vice presidential debate was a lot more civilized. But on the topic of abortion, I think it was a tactical decision not to speak too heavily on it.
Yeah.
I mean, Trump kind of made a massacre of the topic when he spoke about it. And it has been, I mean, abortion's a huge issue when it comes to the presidential election.
Mm-hmm.
That if people are sort of swing voters, then they could go either way. That's one topic that is probably going to sway them in either direction. And I think it's a very, very like precarious point to sort of speak about. They say the wrong thing. I mean, Trump's handled it so awfully that if Vance couldn't make one misstep regarding the topic, because if he did, you know, those swing voters are going to lean to the sides of the Democrats. So I think it was probably a smart decision not to speak about it.
Yeah.
And I think also the topic of abortion gives Waltz then a lot of ammo to sort of go on the defensive with, because it's such a heated and huge topic. But it was interesting. I did expect to him to touch on it more than he did.
He just kept on saying, he just kept on reiterating, I'm pro-family. I'm pro-family. I'm trying
But
to
what
make...
does pro-family even
I
mean?
I think it's just, you know, I think he doesn't really want to... Because I think you just have to be careful. Because also, a lot of the swing voters who are women, a lot of them have said that abortion is the turning point. It's the it's the main issue of contention when they decide who to vote for.
Exactly.
So I think the Trump campaign actually said to Trump before the debate, they were like, just dial down on your opinions on abortion, because it will sway voters not in your favour. So I think that's what Vance was doing. He's kind of like tried to go back to that after Trump absolutely, as you said, massacred the conversation.
What I did like that Waltz did was the injection of first person accounts and specific names.
Yes.
So Hadley Duvall, I got, and
Vance was like, they shouldn't be dead.
Amber Thurman.
Yeah, he was like, it's awful that that's happened, but then doesn't really explain how he's gonna stop that happening in the future.
Just trying to get the sympathy vote, isn't he? There,
I think it was tactical rather than what he actually should have felt.
I don't think he actually means it, because if he did, he would delve into what he's gonna do to change it. But he didn't. He just brought it up to sort of be like, I'm a real person. I empathise. I don't think it should have happened.
Yeah.
As you said, Vance is trying to defend a nigh impossible position when Trump's insinuating that Democrats are going to execute babies after the third trimester. Yeah. So at that point,
I think Vance realised
he had to reel back everything Trump said and present Trump as someone who is not someone rational and sensible who realises that abortion is a major issue in the first point is admitting it's a problem in the United States. The reality that he then had to defend the policy, which was to leave the decision to the states. Obviously, I felt personally that that didn't almost come off very well. It didn't make sense as an argument. But that's the argument that Vance has to defend. There are some red lines here. It's not the Vance campaign, it's the Trump campaign. He has to still condone everything that Trump's doing, but present it in a more logical way.
I would agree.
I think, well, so Waltz was, this is when we can fact check Waltz lightly, because Vance kind of was a bit sheepish and kind of didn't add what's the phrase, didn't add fuel to the flames. So Waltz was like, in Project 25, they're going to call for a registry of pregnancies, which is not actually the case. However, they are going to ask how many abortions take place within the borders and the gestational age of the child when the abortion was carried out and kind of the status of the mother. And I think that level of like scrutiny and surveillance
is crazy.
Terrifying.
It's crazy. It's absolutely crazy. What happened to medical confidentiality? Like, it's even true, if your name isn't being put on that paper, you then become a statistic. And correct me if I'm wrong, but I do think that in the UK, the sort of the latest date you can get an abortion, I think, is 24 weeks. Obviously, the closer you get to that, it sort of becomes more of like you get it for medical reasons. But, you know, your name doesn't go on a piece of paper. They're not trying to figure out when the child was aborted. And in some cases, these are medically necessary abortions that are happening. And women, you know, I think it was I read an article the other day that, because obviously they've left the decision up to the state. So there are some states that allow it and some states that don't. And it was in a state, I don't want to say what it is because I don't want to get it wrong, but it was in one of the states where they've chosen to make abortion illegal. And it blew my mind. So the sentencing for a rapist would be less than the sentencing for the woman who got raped if she chose to abort the child, which is it's absolutely outrageous. And I think that touches on, again, why Vance can't bring such a sensitive topic up in a debate. Because how do you justify that?
Yeah, Vance was very pro letting the states decide. Would be better than having a nationwide abortion ban. However, it also, as Waltz points out, brings up if a woman has to have an abortion in one state where abortion is illegal, and then she has to travel to another state. America's a big place, you know, like it's it takes, you know, days to like drive across the, like across the country to a state where there is a border, especially if like you're in the deep south.
Yeah.
And I thought that was a very salient point to make.
I think that was
well.
A great point. I can't remember the name of the woman who had to do that and eventually passed away, but she had to travel to North Carolina.
As far as I know, that was Amber.
Yeah, so she had to travel, and you know she had. I think.
But
I
dying on the
passage. Yeah, but she died
shocking.
On like her way there or way back, which you know it shows that like, it's just having states decide their own rights is, you know, it's like deadly in some cases for women who can't seek abortions within their own states.
And I like the way that Waltz framed it as a non-partisan issue.
Yeah.
Every woman in America should care what's happening to women's bodies.
Yeah.
And I felt that was a very effective and potent argument against Vance, who tried to skirt the issue.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I think the Vance-Trump debate is so self-obsessed with their own policies.
Yeah.
Whereas Harris and Waltz and coming from a way more compassionate standpoint and they're just like, these are the facts, women are dying, women who have been raped are, you know, victims of incest,
children,
yeah, exactly. And if some of the extreme statements Trump and Vance have said end up to be true, in which abortions can only be carried out at 6 weeks, or if not at all, even in cases of.
And 6 weeks in itself is crazy because a lot of women
don't
know they're
pregnant
until sort of the 10th.
And I just think, like, if you're not going to allow. I personally, if I was in a state in America, if I was living in a state in America where abortion wasn't legal, especially if it wasn't illegal for like medical emergencies, rape, incest, why would I stay there?
I agree. I completely
agree
with you.
Because it, even in the off chance that that would happen to me, like,
it's putting yourself at risk. Exactly. And I just don't think that sometimes, as you mentioned earlier, you know, the swing voters, this is, you know, a massive point of consideration to them. If Trump were to, you know, regain presidency in this election and they did make it not the state's choice, and they, as you said, either 6 weeks or banned abortion as a whole, I don't think people
when we
are.
Do a restoration of Roe, that works best. That doesn't preclude us from increasing funding for children. It doesn't increase us from making sure that
well,
once
we've
that
got child an sound by this.
They get early childhood education, they get health care. So the hiding behind we're going to do all these other things when you're not proposing them in your budget. Kamala Harris is proposing them. She's proposing all those things to make life easier for families. I asked this.
Thanks.
Wonderful.
Yeah,
that was a great soundbite. Okay. Thank you, James.
Sorry, Ash, do you want to continue what you were saying?
Yeah, I don't think, certainly not the Trump and Vance campaign have realized how catastrophic it would be if the entire country
insane.
Banned abortions. The amount of unnecessary deaths that would occur, because banning abortion doesn't stop abortion, it stops safe abortions.
Agreed. Yes, that's the point.
And it would be absolutely catastrophic for a healthcare system that's already on the brink, might I add.
Yeah.
It would just be, it would put so many lives in danger, not to mention the mental health.
Also, I just think, especially for doctors who are in that field of medicine, having, like, going through your career and being like, I want to help you, but if I help you, I could go to prison. Like, I would feel awful. Like,
that's ridiculous.
I don't know.
In some states, stupidly, because I honestly, I can't wrap my head around how this is happening. In the states where abortion is illegal now, in some states, they've actually stopped teaching future doctors how to perform medical abortions. They've taken it out of the curriculum, which is crazy because you might need to do that to save someone's life.
Exactly.
It might be a medical emergency, and they don't even know how to do it anymore. So can you imagine if that applied to the whole country? Not a single doctor in America knew how to perform a medically safe abortion.
Agreed.
It would be catastrophic.
I wonder if they would ever be allowed to do that, though, or if there would be, like, way too much backlash, is what I would say.
Well, if there's anything I've learned about Trump, is he's not one to shy away from backlash.
Oh,
yeah.
Oh, my God. Yeah.
And he seems very, 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 very passionate about the topic of banning abortion.
So
he seems
passionate.
Like something he wants to get done quickly.
Yeah. Well, if we talk about passion, then we can move on to... Oh, sorry, James,
I was going to say, again, Trump's rhetoric on this is everything, especially when he's pivoted to now saying that we're here to support the nation's women, give them bright futures, they should feel
bright
safe.
Bright futures as mothers.
protected under me.
What a grim perspective.
Not sure I want to be protected under Trump, actually.
Again, as you said, it's whatever is going to make Trump more politically viable is the position he's going to take. So when he thought that he could almost mobilize an anti-abortion stance to almost play devil's advocate and see who he could rile up with that idea, then he used it effectively as a political tactic. Now when he sees that the winds of change have brought a whole swathe of the United States, which, and a massive portion of the electorate, which doesn't believe that an abortion ban would be in the nation's best interest, he realises he has to pivot his whole mentality and his whole mindset.
What I wonder is whether he'll say all these things and then if he ever gets into office, he'll just revoke all of them.
Well, I'm reading now that Trump vows to veto any federal abortion ban.
Okay.
So
Trump says a lot of things, though, that he doesn't do. Interestingly, in the debate, actually, that something you said just then just reminded me of it, was when Vance said that Trump gave over power peacefully.
Yes, this is what I was literally about to say. Trump was very passionate on January 6th. I think
very, very passionate.
Everybody can hold to that. And I think that's that was like one of the... I think that was quite a big issue in the debate, is Waltz was kind of saying, you know, we've got to stop... we've got to just like stop lying and saying that January 6th didn't happen, because it did.
Exactly.
And
it,
like, there are deaths and injuries to prove that. And when Waltz was like, no, we gave over power peacefully.
No, it made an absolute mockery of the American government.
Ridiculous. And also it just reduces a faith in the American electoral system. Because if you're going to have a president who has a hissy fit, he's like, I actually won this debate, let's storm the Capitol. What?
And then and then in his debate, he was talking about how he didn't tell people to do that. But a person in a position of power, especially a position of that much power, has to know that if you tell people to do something, they're going to do it.
Yeah, agreed. Especially when you have supporters as passionate as Trump supporters.
Exactly. And it's ridiculous. It made an absolute mockery out of the whole American electoral system.
But yeah, that was the main point. One of the main points of the debate it was mostly a peaceful debate. That was where Waltz...
It got a bit heated, yeah.
I would get angry as well.
It would piss me off.
Yeah.
I understand where Waltz is coming from. But that was just crazy how they're still just maintaining that power was given over peacefully and like nothing untoward happened there. There were deaths to prove it, injuries to prove it.
I don't know.
How long did he wait before putting out that message to say that they should leave the capital? Something like 2-3 hours?
Yeah, not long.
The damage was done, and he knew that the damage would have been done at that point anyways.
Yeah.
And it's scary, because it's almost mirroring sort of, you know, a dictatorship. I say
this
you do.
I agree. It's like it's the dictatorship in terms of, like, you're just...
blindly
just
following one man.
It's censorship. It's like, no, that didn't happen.
I've got a quote from Trump on January 6th from his Twitter handle. These are the things and events that happen when a sacred landslide election is so unceremoniously and viciously stripped away from great patriots. Go home with love and in peace. Remember this day forever.
Remember what?
That whole message is a bit of a double entendre.
Remember
there.
This
is what happens when power gets stripped.
Where love and
I think
peace
he just
factors
like,
into.
I think he just pictures himself in like a big stallion.
He sees himself
like
as God, which
DC.
Is the problem.
Yeah.
Like he.
It's
because
glorification.
Where do you guys stand on talking about, January the 6th and the very unpeaceful transition of power? Where do you stand on having a criminally indicted president?
Well, America allows it.
He
can be president in prison.
He can pardon himself.
Oh my God, it's actually ridiculous. Is his trial coming up soon?
Yes.
But it reflects both your points, the transition away from any sense of normalcy in the presidential candidate, that now you have someone who has these diehard supporters and yet on every criterion doesn't match the standards set for a US president. Over 250 years, this job has almost fulfilled a certain profile, and Trump has intended from the beginning to wreck that profile.
And succeeded.
He's been, relatively successful up to this point. Which is why circling back, the vice presidential debate in this case does matter a lot. Because it's one of the last public appearances. Obviously, Trump, Vance and Waltz are acting as ambassadors for the campaign. So it's one of the last almost major pushes on both sides of the political spectrum and what voters will remember. And I feel that ending the debate on that note of, do you want someone who is going to tooth and nail question our nation's democracy to that extent being in office, was a great way to
close. Yeah. I agree.
I think I find it so funny because this would just never happen in UK politics. Like,
because in UK politics, they actually cut the mic when they're meant to. That presidential debate, my God.
They also, it was when COVID happened, and like they all kind of just, there was like the massive like Sugo report, and there were, you know, instances where people were like not following their lockdown rules. It was just like everyone just quit.
Yeah.
They were just like, I can't, I've disobeyed our country, like I've disobeyed the rules, I have to stand down. I'm not saying...
Yeah, we don't condone this.
I'm not saying that I support these people. However, you know, compared to Trump, who's
been criminally convicted, actually
of multiple things, and he's not standing down. It's you can draw comparisons, and I just think it's.
I think an interesting point you've made, though, off the back of that, is that Trump does have, we've talked about before on this podcast, very good political instincts. And he's able to navigate the landscape very well.
Yeah.
Even to the point where, as you said, those criminal convictions have been postponed to after the election. Things always seem to end up breaking his way.
Yeah.
And just some of the coverage reports I've read indicating that Vance did win over Waltz in the debate. Again, almost... I wouldn't call it luck, because I don't think that factors in here, really. I'd call it more favourable circumstances that keep breaking Trump's way. And in an election, as you said last week, where a few thousand votes are going to make the difference, that is politically very powerful and potentially very dangerous for the country.
Well, that's why I think this is like a great year to be in this country, because it's just, I don't know. I mean, Tom, our guest for the past 2 weeks, has if you listened to last week's episode, has said that he believes Trump is going to win. I seriously do not know who's going to win.
I hope not, because I do think, you know, James, as you said, about how he's, Trump has basically made every effort to sort of dismantle the profile of what we assume a US president should be, what it has been over the past, what, couple hundred years.
Yeah.
I do think Trump resuming power in office, especially in a time as precarious as this, would be catastrophic for American democracy. I don't think it would recover.
Not even democracy, foreign policy.
Most European leaders have blatantly cited that they are not going to want to work with Trump.
Which, fair enough, I wouldn't want to either.
I wouldn't want to.
But it would just crumble, and America is...
Apart from Viktor Orban.
Yeah, I literally don't know what would happen.
Well, actually, Putin's apparently his best pal, so America and Russia are going to be great friends if Trump goes into office.
I actually thought that Putin came out and was like, I support Harris.
Well, yeah, well, Trump in his debate was like, I could have settled it with a phone call, or like, I could have had a coffee with him.
It was when he was like, oh, Harris had a talk with Putin, and then like 2 days later he went to war, and Harris was like,
Putin's a great friend of mine.
So funny. But it, kind of talking about foreign policy, the main... So Harris has issues talking about the economy, and this debate showed that Waltz had issues talking about foreign policy, because at the very start of the debate, so as you know, on Tuesday, there was an Iranian missile attack on Israel. Mm-hmm. And the moderators asked whether candidates would support a preemptive strike on Iran. And Waltz, he said he used, like, I'm going to say maybe 75% of his answer talking about how much he wants Harris, like, as a leader, and not really talking about foreign policy itself, which kind of showed, I mean, he was warming up to the debate, and I get that's a very difficult question to start with, especially because it was so recent, but I think he doesn't usually talk about foreign policy, and I think that became very apparent.
I think it came across to me as that's what he was instructed to do. Yeah. Like, the way he evaded it and, you know, kind of immediately switched the focus to, you know, how Harris would be a great leader, it kind of came across to me that he was sort of instructed, you know, if you do get asked a question on foreign policy, kind of, you know, shift it in another direction where possible. Yeah. Because he did, you are right, he did really struggle to speak on that issue and barely touched on it, which I don't think worked in his favour very well.
I think just because when Vance was so confident, I think
especially when you're going up against such an experienced debater, because, you know, James said that, you know, his entire political career has essentially, like, prepared him for a debate, like, this is what he's born to do. And then when you're going up against someone like that, I don't think you can evade topics like that. I think it's going to have the opposite effect of what you think, because it did kind of look like Vance sort of did have the upper hand on it. I know, like, public opinion, it was kind of tight on who won it, but it did ever so slightly lean towards, you know, Vance winning the debate.
Yeah.
And I do get that in some cases he did have more ground to cover, so it you could see it in a way as, you know, it was easier to come out on top in that debate. He had a lot more to speak about, a lot more to sort of, like, reverse. But I think it was a mistake for Waltz to not. He should have delved way more into foreign policy, especially it being as prominent as it is today. And that's another thing I think swing voters will be looking for, is what their stance is, you know, on the ongoing wars, what they're going to do to combat it, where America's going to stand. And I think I certainly was looking forward to hearing his answer, and it was quite disappointing to just not hear one at all, really.
Especially, and I think, just to touch on that, the reason why Waltz's answer was jumbled was because that event was so recent and there wasn't any level of preparation for it. And as Waltz is from a relatively rural state, outside of the public eye most of the time, doesn't have a great hand in American foreign policy within his previous position. The fact that he then has to take on an ambassadorial role for the whole of the United States foreign policy in his first ever live debate is probably relatively daunting, which comes across in his pause, in his warming to that answer, in his almost instinct to move away from the actual issues in Iran and talk about, as you said, Harris. So if we want to cut him any slack, I think that provides explanation of that. But at the same time, we can argue that he should have been prepared to talk about foreign policy and to have that come up as an issue.
Yeah, I think because this election's so close, like, there's no room for error.
I agree.
Like, you need to have every single one of your policies,
especially foreign policy.
Especially because Harris answered questions about foreign policy in her debate so well, I thought. She was like, Israel has the right to defend itself, but it matters how.
Yeah.
Whereas Waltz kind of skirted around any issue. And obviously, it's heated up massively in the Middle East over the past week. And no one knows what's going to happen.
Yeah.
Like, who knows?
And the only other point that Vance made, which, rightly or wrongly, is true, is that all of this happened under the Biden administration. So technically Harris is still the incumbent here.
Yeah.
We know relatively well what Harris would do to defuse the situation in the Middle East, because, again, for the past year, it's been her and Biden who've made those decisions.
True.
Whereas Vance, by being an alternative, is able to speculate a lot more on what Trump could or couldn't have done in the Middle East to rectify the situation better. And because Waltz is attached to, obviously, Harris and therefore Biden, he has to defend the policies that have already taken place in the Middle East, a lot of which are unpopular with the Palestinian and now the Iranian populations in the US, which are going to turn out at the polls in these key swing states. And I felt that as a result, Waltz needed to be really clear on what his position was and needed to give some those populations specifically some faith and assurance. And I'm not sure that answer did that.
I think it was the very start of the debate, and I think we can draw similarities between Waltz and Harris's debate style. I think they both take quite a while to warm up. Well, a little bit at least. Mm-hmm. And I think like going straight into that, I mean,
it was a daunting question to ask.
I would be quaking in my boots. Yeah. I had a question.
But the thing is, so I know it was recent. But I do agree with James on it did happen under the Biden administration. The one thing, well, one of the most important things that they needed on lock was foreign policy. Yeah. Like it is going to be a key issue with swing voters. They, as you said, it's going to come down to what, like a couple thousand of voters. And you needed to, especially when it's such a prominent thing that's going on right now. Like, as you said, it's heated up so much in the last week. It's nothing. Well, obviously, it's very tough to be in an administration when you've got a war going on in the Middle East.
Multiple wars.
Yeah, so it's sort of like, who can say what, you know, the right or the wrong thing to do or how you do it. But it has been the Biden-Harris administration making these policies. Things haven't gotten better. They've gotten worse. Yeah. And as James pointed out, both the Palestinians and both sides have shown like massive disinterest in like how upset they are at the policies being introduced by the US. And I just think he really, really needed to have gotten that right, and he didn't. And I think that will make a difference in the polls. Yeah. I really do think it'll reflect it.
If we're speaking more broadly on the debate, though, something I did want to unpick is that Waltz isn't there to outshine Harris in terms of his debating skills. He's there to be a good sidekick.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that is his best asset, that he may not know the policies inside out right now, but he doesn't need to, because Harris is the one who is at the top of the ticket. And so at the end of the day, people are voting for her first and foremost. Compared to Vance, who almost, in a sense, tried to outshine Trump and go his own way in that debate. Which is potentially antagonistic for a vice president and a presidential relationship. That's the reason why, I mean, we talked about whether Shapiro might have done better in that debate.
Yeah, you turned to me. Remember at the beginning when Waltz had that wobble, James turned to me and he was like, Shapiro wouldn't have done this. And I was like, yes, but I also think Shapiro could have outshined Harris.
Yeah.
I also think, you know, Vance and Trump, their relationship's rocky. Like, you know.
It's going to be very interesting to see how Trump react to this in the coming week,
and also Vance, I think.
Yeah,
like I think how that's going to change that, if it will change their relationship and vice versa on the Harris side. But I don't know who won, but I think like
they had a good time.
They had a they're probably gonna, you know, go to a bar at some point.
Yeah,
have
double
a couple
day.
Cocktails. Yeah, double day. But at the end of the day, I don't think the debate is going to change the outcome of the election.
Okay.
I think
as of right now, where are we standing? What do we think the outcome will be? We know it's going to be close. We're all in agreement on that.
I'm going to have a quick look at the polls.
Yeah,
that's cheating. Just, you can't look at the polls before making your assumption. We'll assume and then we'll look at the polls.
That's a difficult one. It's hard to be biased.
Pennsylvania. That's the
Harris. I think Harris.
I think Harris has got Pennsylvania on lock.
I think Harris
she's
been in the lead for about over 3 weeks, I think, in Pennsylvania. Unless like Trump makes a visit to Pennsylvania.
He will, if he thinks. I reckon he will make a visit to Pennsylvania. Yeah.
Actually, he, just on that, he's going back to the place where the first assassination attempt happened to do a rally tomorrow.
Can we touch on the assassination attempt?
Yeah, let's do
If that rally comes off well, that could be it, because the symbolism of that is so potent.
True.
It's what almost like a phoenix rising
from the ashes. Yeah, for real.
Oh, good. But yeah, let's touch on the two assassination attempts actually now.
Actually insane.
What have you? I'm sure you've all heard the conspiracies that, you know, the assassination attempt wasn't actually one and it was all planned and
what do we think?
I do think it was convenient to go as far as it was, you know, a hoax. I'm not sure. I mean, there are probably a lot of people out there that wouldn't mind, you know, having a go at trying to take him out. But
well, I was saying this last week. I was saying if there was a third assassination attempt, I think then
think
people
that'd be
would
enough to.
If there's
him.
A third, no. I was going to say if there's a third assassination attempt, I'd be like, right, something's going on in the Trump administration. Right. They're trying to gain popularity.
Because how has it happened? I mean, the first one, what it grazed his ear. I believe. I mean, although after that first presidential debate, I'm starting to question whether it hit more than just his ear. But and then the second one didn't actually go within the vicinity of him. He just left a note or something.
I think he was there for. He was like camped out for 12 hours on Trump's golf course in Florida. I don't think he actually shot any shot.
I
don't think he did.
I think he left a note or something, or was something indicating
he was
planning.
It wasn't really an assassination. It was.
But they'll use it. Yeah, they'll use
it. Obviously, they'll use it. Mm. I mean, still someone wanted to kill Trump, and that's something.
Should we look at the polls?
Yeah, if we look at the polls quickly.
I think Harris has got it, ever so slightly so.
I do think it's going to be close.
I'd be disappointed if America voted Trump into office, but I wouldn't be surprised.
Okay, so currently Harris is leading with 49% and Trump is 47%. Okay.
Jesus, that is close.
Pennsylvania, Harris is 49%, Trump is 48%. Nevada, Trump is winning, as in Georgia and Arizona, but in Nevada, Michigan, and Wisconsin, Harris winning. So, 4 out of the 7 swing states Harris has.
Okay.
And they're all very close. Mm.
So when is it? The 6th or the 5th?
When's the 5th of November.
Oh, so it's a month tomorrow.
Month tomorrow.
A lot can change in a month.
It definitely can.
I mean, if you think back to this time last month.
I mean, considering our typical prime ministerial elections are 4 to 6 weeks. That whole campaign can happen in that time period.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Very, very true. Could be another assassination attempt.
Yeah. So the New York Times says polls will change between now and election day, and they can't be expected to exactly match the final results. But if Harris won every state where she currently leads in our polling averages, she would reach the necessary 270 electoral votes. So
I think a thought to leave on, though, is at this point, people are going to start shoring up who they're at least thinking about voting for.
Mm-hmm.
So how many independent voters are really left a month before the election? And who is already set in who they're voting for?
It's difficult.
That is the ultimate question.
I mean, I think we know, you know.
One out of three of us can actually vote in this election.
Yeah, okay, because you're an independent voter.
I'm not going to disclose my political views.
If you have listened to the rest of the podcast, I'm sure you can know. Or maybe not. Maybe he's just lying to us.
He supports Trump. It's clear as day.
Yeah, for real.
He's wearing a MAGA cap right now.
I might give my vote to Tom and let him.
Oh, no, don't do that.
We know what's going to happen there.
All right, guys. Thank you very much for listening.
Thank you for listening.
Thanks for having me.
Next week with absolutely no idea what
what's
going to
happen?
Gonna talk about.
Who knows?
I'm sure there'll be a lot of content to fill that political vacuum in the meantime.
Yes, there will be.
For sure.
And I will be in Washington, potentially.
So you'll be dialing in?
I'll be getting first-hand coverage.
Laura Koonsberg type figure. Anyway, thank you.
Right,
thanks,
thank you very
guys.
Much. Bye.